A good 10 minutes for our YouTube exclusive audience. Recapping the two playoff games last night, Cleveland evening the series with Detroit and OKC eliminating your Los Angeles Lakers. Went to dinner last night, Trivoli Tavern, incredible spot, probably one of my favorite restaurants anywhere in the country. Brought the staff out for that. So that also meant your boy was watching the game on his phone for a little while. And if you're watching the second half, the start of that second half with Cleveland and Detroit, you're like, hey, is Detroit not scored in forever? And that's what it felt like. So I went back and watched it again this morning, trying to figure out what happened during this 23-0 run. That's where I'm going to focus on this game, because that's kind of where it's decided an hour or two apiece. So a lot of really good stuff here from Cleveland. Now, throughout the series, you're paying attention to defensive assignments and then seeing what teams start experimenting with and then what they actually prefer and can be something different from what they've started with. Generally, they wanted Harden on Asar Thompson because Asar Thompson is not a good offensive player. He's not a threat at all. There's a couple times the ball in his hand where if he's getting downhill, it can kind of look cool, but those are not enough for you to worry about. There's no spacing whatsoever with him. Like, it's a real dilemma for Bickerstaff and how he wants to play out some of these lineups. And again, sometimes it's an offensive sacrifice situation for the Asar. Defensive pluses that you get because he is terrific, but like this, it's trending towards kind of a bad scenario for Detroit having him in the lineup, especially with Duren. So let's run through this. Mobley started the game on Asar. Okay, so I still feel like Harden has been assigned to him more in the first three games. And one thing that I also think is frustrating about Asar is that if Harden was playing on him, that means he's allowed to float. But honestly, with Harden that much defensive freedom, it doesn't necessarily even mean that it's going to be that good. Maybe he gets in the way. Maybe there's a double team and a post catch. But Harris, who likes to get going from the side and kind of that extended post catch, obviously not in the block, out on the wing, but deeper. Asar, if he was on the other side, I saw some opportunities for him to cut where Harden completely lost him. He just doesn't pay attention to guys when he's not assigned to him, even if his responsibility is Asar. I think there were some cuts from Asar that he just never really was thinking about and kind of waiting and watching to see what Tobias Harris was going to do. So with Mobley on him, that obviously changes things, because now Mobley, who's a former defensive player of the year, is allowed to float all over the place. So that is probably what Cleveland will do the rest of the time, or what they will prioritize, because you could see this playing out. It's really, really brutal. Like, here's one play. All right, so if you have Asar outside, Mobley doesn't care. Then if you bring him into the dunker spot, which makes sense on some of the drives from Cade, but then that also clogs things up for Duren. So you can't put him outside. You can't put him in the corner, because if you have him in the corner as like a three-point threat, Mobley's on him. Mobley's going to have his foot in the paint on the non-ball side. Ball side, he's going to come off of him as well. And again, this all screws up Duren. So Mitchell, who gives us a three, a minute 40 into the second half, part of an 8-0 run to get things started here for Cleveland, you can see, okay, this is the dude that is about to get on fire. This is why I bring up his previous history as far as his scoring output in all of these games. It's why I ran through it last week going like, hey, eventually we will see this again, even though he was having a hard time getting to the free throw line. There's a play here where Cade takes a three one-on-one with Harden, and Cade has a brutal stretch during this time. His turnovers, whether it's the three in a row that basically lost them game three, I'd say as an aside, I don't know what's going on with inbounding right now. Years ago, there seemed to be something where teams were like, hey, let's see if we can almost get a backcourt like 20 times a game. And now that's like a normal thing with how loose everybody is, passing it to somebody else who maybe hasn't cleared, and it could be a backcourt violation. There are teams that are just really lax on the inbounding, even though it's happening in the playoffs, and I'm noticing it all the time. Strus's steal on Cade's inbound in game three was an incredible defensive play, the anticipation, but Cade had three brutal turnovers all in a row there in game three. Again, you could argue that cost him the game. So Cade has some more issues, but I think Cade is making the right read, but it's leading to turnovers. But in this play in particular, because I'm going to point out a couple of things, Cade takes a three on Harden because I think he just likes that it's Harden and it's single coverage, and he's realizing, like, even with the mistakes that Cade's making, it's because he's realizing, like, okay, well, these are what my options are going to be now based on what they're doing. And again, this gets back to Asar. Asar was at the three-point line trying to set an off-ball screen for Duncan, which, okay, cool, because they don't want to bring Asar into the on-ball screen, because then it's just going to be two defenders staying with Cade and everybody ignoring Asar. So they're trying to get him involved, setting something off-ball, but it doesn't really work. Mobley, while this is happening, is basically in the restricted area. So Cade sees Mobley not moving. Cade sees that the Duncan screen being set for him is not changing anything defensively, and Duncan doesn't necessarily get free. And then it's like, all right, but if I drive past Harden, that means Allen and Mobley are down there already. So you have to think about all of these things that Cade's seeing while he's trying to figure out, like, what's my best case scenario? And that's where he pulls up for the three and misses it. Mobley also, on another play, is completely off of Asar. Allen's fighting with Duren, and that means that off of the miss for a defensive rebound, Mobley doesn't have to fight with anybody. Allen and Duren can battle it out, and Mobley's just standing around waiting for the ball to come to him because his guy is somebody he's not respecting, and it just makes that part of it so much easier for Mobley. Another play, Cade, everybody goes with them, all right? Cade makes a great pass to Asar, and Asar then is like driving by himself. He sees all of these bigs come up. It's not the easiest play for him to just continuously go and with the ball and like just go to the rim and see if you get fouled. I can see why there was a bit of a hesitation, so I'm not saying that play was necessarily easy, but I've seen this from him in other spots too. It's like you're better off just going, okay, because you're going to be quicker off the floor than almost anybody else out there in the entire league. So catch off the drive. You're already ahead of the defense. Just go at the rim. And he's hesitating on some of this stuff. As this run is being put together, Harden has been fantastic since the fourth quarter of game three. I could focus on the stuff that I focus on, but honestly, the reason I bring that stuff up is when he's also bad offensively, he has been really locked in here. And with him, I'd almost say if I were Atkinson, I want you taking five shots in the first quarter. I don't care if you go 0 for 5. I want you feeling like you have to be aggressive and hoping that sets the tone. And you're hoping, if you're a Cleveland fan here, that this is some sort of carryover where he had a bunch of points in the fourth quarter of game three. His passing, he had about four dimes last night that are just incredible. So credit to him for getting back into this series now and evening this thing up. All right, another play. It's 65-56. Cleveland sets two screens to get Mitchell against Duncan Robinson. Duncan gets really lost on this play. That's another three. Cade turnover to Asar. Cade an awful turnover to the corner. Mitchell's now completely feeling it. Like in a way we haven't seen from him all playoffs. I know he had a couple 30-pointers there against Toronto, but 14 points in 4+ minutes. Now, they take Duncan Robinson out. They take Asar Thompson out. They take Duren out, and they go with Dennis LeVert and Reed in, because now you're going, all right, we have Reed, who's maybe better offensively than Duren, which is kind of not what you're thinking about, extending a guy who could be all NBA. You're going, all right, Duncan's not going to get hunted, so maybe Dennis is in the fight a little bit more. LeVert actually had an incredible scoring night from a guy that generally I would have thought would have been out of this rotation, but we know offensively he's a gifted player, so we get to see a little bit of that. But now the problem is Reed, not Duren, is fighting with Allen, and as soon as he comes in, it's Allen and Mobley still the double big lineup against Reed, and Reed gets put under the basket by Allen for a dunk, which is a 21-0 run. 23-0 run. With Mitchell getting LeVert, he didn't even want a screen on LeVert. He was like, I'm good, didn't need it, scores again. Detroit goes 6-0-2 to start the second half without a point. They did get it to 9 points late in the third quarter, so you could say, hey, they fought back a little bit, but that's where the game was lost. And I'll close for at least this game on this thought, and that is, what I love about the playoffs is how extreme teams can, like, they can go, hey, maybe we should try this, or what would this look like defensively? And the extremes that it goes to over the course of multiple games. My favorite one is Houston in 2018 against Golden State, where they basically were like, you know, we're just going to guard the three guys, Durant, Steph, and Clay, with five players. We are going to ignore whoever the other two guys are and see if that helps. If Houston had made a below average number of threes, maybe they win that series and then lose in the NBA Finals. But I really love that kind of stuff. You can even go back to like Bogut on Tony Allen in that Memphis series in 2015, where it was like, hey, what if we put Bogut on Tony Allen because we don't have to? And it's kind of like the Assar thing that's happening now. Hey, what if instead of like making it easier on James defensively, which may actually be counterproductive because now he doesn't really feel like he's like has to worry about anything. And they don't really have a lot of on-ball guys that are going to hunt James anyways. What if Mobley, what if our best defensive player is allowed to do whatever he wants? So now you have a real dilemma if you're Detroit going, how are the Assar minutes going to look if they're going to play at this extreme and ignoring him? So, yeah, the momentum here with Cleveland, but we'll see because, you know, we've seen the highs and lows from, I think, everyone on Cleveland offensively where sometimes you don't notice Mobley at all. We know they're the bad Harden games probably right around the corner after a really good stretch. I don't know that he's like completely figured it out. Now he's going to be fine. And, you know, again, Mitchell is probably good for a shooting dud in here. But the Assar thing is like a real tough decision for Detroit. The Lakers are eliminated. Let's give them a lot of credit. They fought as hard as they could in this series against OKC, completely outmanned. You're missing one of the five best players in the world. You're going to lose the series. And a little different than Philly's output in game four. So you kind of wondered, hey, could this thing get really, really ugly? And it didn't. I mean, they were in it right up until the final minute of this game. So they deserve credit for that. Looking at this fourth quarter, LA comes in with a four-point lead. LA shot 8 of 11 to start the quarter, and it was still an eight-point swing the other way where they were then down 4. Like, that's almost impossible to do. Some of the stuff that was happening here with A.J. Mitchell is just ridiculous that they actually need him. Because it wasn't a great SGA scoring series, and I'll get to that number in a second. AJ started the game 12 of 16. McCain had two plays in here where it was like, hey, somebody finally attacked LeBron defensively. There's a play early in the fourth where McCain is coming up to meet the ball, but then back cuts LeBron, and LeBron just falls down. And it was so bad that LeBron like he complained a little to the ref about like, oh, my arm was grabbed. But he just fell down because, again, McCain is 2 years in and LeBron's 2 decades in. But I think other teams just go, hey, we'd rather just pick on either the center, Jackson Hayes, which I think is OKC's preference, or we'll put Austin Reeves in the play, or we'll put Luke Kennard in the play. So they just weren't going to go at LeBron as much. But that was something we saw there. Also, LeBron lost McCain on a three. I'm not criticizing LeBron. I thought LeBron played his ass off for what you could expect. He shot it poorly. I think he started 2 of 8, but they were really hard shots, and he was getting doubled a lot, and I don't think LA was necessarily making OKC pay off of those doubles. Smart, who I would give a ton of credit for and think there's going to be a real market for him in free agency because of how hard he played and how much pride he took in the SGA assignment. He had a really tough start to the fourth quarter, which led to them losing the lead, and that all happening while they shot it so well. He had a miss off of a really clean look. He had 3 turnovers. He had an offensive foul. All that happened within just a few minutes. So at 109-103, OKC's now put together a 22-11 run. Smart gets an and one, and now they're right back in the game. It's a one-point game. Here's my favorite play from OKC. SGA has the ball at the top. Hartenstein comes up to set a screen. That brings up Jackson Hayes. Smart is already in the play. SGA keeps the ball. To stay with SGA, which he knows is going to happen now, 4 games of this stuff. Hartenstein rolls perfectly off the screen, knowing that he's getting the ball. So it's way better when you're rolling and you know you're getting the ball because then you're allowed to kind of think one step ahead. And as soon as Hartenstein gets the ball, he knows before he gets the ball that all the help is going to come to him. 3 players collapse on Hartenstein on this roll. Chet comes from the left side, hard dive in, finishes with the dunk. And then 2 misses from LA, LeBron and Reeves, and that was kind of the game. SGA scoring in this series, he averaged 24.5 points per game. That's the lowest output in a playoff series per game since that Houston 7-game series when Chris Paul was the leader of the team 6 years ago. He averaged 16 a game. So that's the least amount that he's averaged in a series in 6 years. They didn't need him. They didn't need their second best player, unless it's Chet now, so we can say that J-Dub is the second or third. He's played 2 of the 8 playoff games. If you look at the points off of turnovers in this series for LA, this is the part that's going to drive J.J. Redick crazy. I mean, they didn't have a chance to win this series, but when you give the opponent 98 total points off of turnovers in just 4 games, you're not going to win. And you know, Reeves, I thought, was both brilliant offensively, but also really loose with some awful turnovers. But I do wonder, because everybody turns the ball over against OKC, because we know it's because of their defense, if it's the great defensive turnovers and then the turnovers that just look completely unforced that are terrible because you're actually trying to figure out some way to challenge OKC. They were throwing lobs into guys that had no chance, like just awful lobs where you're thinking, well, maybe they're only doing that because they're going, it's so hard to break these guys down individually defensively. We may take some more chances with some of these passes, and then those turnovers look like they're not happening because of the defense when they actually are. A lot of Lakers conversation about what's going to happen here. They have a ton of cap space if they don't bring their guys back. If they don't bring back Austin Reeves, it'd be $67 million in cap space. That's with no LeBron. That's with no Ayton. That's with no Rui. That's with Smart opting out, Ayton opting out. You know, Kennard's an unrestricted free agent. So, yeah, like, hey, the Lakers have all this cap space. But as we've learned, when you run through the best available free agents, like, I think Rui's considered a top 15 available free agent in the NBA. And I think we all like Rui. But, you know, and I think he's been great for the Lakers, especially this year. But you're like, man, he's like in the top 15 of best free agent options. The point is this, is that for years now, the free agent classes have sucked because guys just signed the extensions figuring I'll just ask for a trade later on, which is something we've been talking about now for a couple of years. Reeves' number, I don't know what that's going to be. You know, I think for a long time you thought Utah could be a really good landing spot for him, but they've spent their cap space on what's going to happen with the Jaren Jackson Jr. contract where that kicks in next year. He's going to be at $49 million. Markkanen's at $40 million. So depending on what Utah could do to get creative, it's not the same thing that it was as an option before the trade deadline. With Chicago's $63.5 million in cap space, would they actually want to sign Reeves for a massive number? I don't know. Doesn't seem like it. And then Brooklyn, would you just say, hey, Reeves, like, here's the ball with this year's lottery pick and Michael Porter Jr., depending on how into it he is? So there doesn't seem to be like, hey, here's a list of three or four teams that you're definitely bidding against if you're LA. The problem is the history. Like, they got Reeves on the cheap the last time around as a restricted free agent because nobody else wanted to have their cap hold held up. That was the old San Antonio thing where, like, they just didn't want to make him an offer and then force LA to match it because they didn't want to get in the way of their own business, although San Antonio probably should have done something like that. They didn't, and by the way, it's all worked out for San Antonio. And then you have the LeBron part of it where, you know, is he going to do $15 million somewhere else on a one-year deal? Does it make sense with Cleveland that would have to figure out some stuff considering how their payroll is? Would Golden State make sense? You know, it doesn't make any sense that he's going to any place that's going to lose. And I don't think he's done because I think LeBron is a theatrical person. And I think LeBron would – it'd be very strange to me for him to just retire and that was the move, unless there's already a documentary that's being made and it's going to surprise all of us and that was sort of the play. I'd feel like with LeBron, because of who he is and his status, that there has to be some sort of play that is content about the end of his career. And for it to have been a secret and then he just decides, yeah, I'm actually done without any kind of fanfare would seem very anti-LeBron. But again, this Lakers team, a ton of decisions with their own roster, but the Reeves number, they're in a good spot. Luka loves Austin, so there's that. Loves him as a teammate, loves him as a friend. But they're in a good spot because this could turn into one of those, like, maybe they save a little bit because of the lack of, like, realistic bidders from teams that may love Reeves as a player, but they're like, yeah, we're just not sure that this is the decision we make with our cap space. Or they just bring in the asset for a ton of money going, hey, there's nobody else to spend it on that we like as much as Austin Reeves. Our NBA mailbag for our Big 10 minutes. Well, it's good 10 minutes. We haven't shit. Yeah.
Or Big 10 country. So
Big 10 minutes, probably a lot of Big 10 fans probably wouldn't want me hosting that show. Although that's kind of clever. If you were going to do 10-minute Big Ten podcasts and go Big 10 minutes, that might be – that. May I might do it now. It's just a good name.
We did walk by Kadick, and we weren't sure, like, you know, hey, what are you thinking? Do you like him? Do you not like him? I don't know. He's a big dude.
I liked him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, you can go fuck yourself.
Team Cignetti. Yeah.
I take nothing back from my criticisms of the 24 season.
Fair.
Yeah. All right. So the NBA mailbag for a good 10 minutes is NBA mailbag rr@gmail.com. We are littered. We've never had this many emails before. So it must have been my appearance on Wake Up Barstool. Mm. What do we got?
This is from Ryan, R-Y-A-N. Subject is Luka. Obviously, the Luka trade was a disaster, but after a round one flameout last year and him being injured this year, one could argue that the idea itself of trading Luka was not wrong. The execution of the deal was. So my question is, what would have been a trade that the Mavs could have made that would have been acceptable last February? Ryan from Long Island.
Would you have done Ant?
Yeah.
You would have traded Ant for Luka if you were Minnesota?
No. I would have accepted Ant. I would not if I was Minnesota. No way.
Would you have done Tatum?
No.
Are we saying this right now, though, because he just hurt his hamstring and isn't playing?
No, you know me. I'm a Luka defender.
15 and
I don't think Boston
March?
Can do that. I don't think Boston can do that. Because the other thing, too, is if I'm trading a Boston guy, like I'm trading Jaylen. We've talked about this. If you're asking me to, like, fantasy draft the league, Ant and Luka is more of a discussion for me. I'd rather have Luka than Tatum, but not from Boston's perspective.
It would have been really tough after they just won a championship
right.
to do it. And they beat Luka, and they attacked Luka relentlessly. Yep. And that was kind of the game plan of like, hey, this guy sucks on defense. If you're telling me or you're asking me like, hey, were some of Nico Harrison's concerns about Luka justified? Like, yeah. I mean, he's way too young to look this different from how he looked 5 years ago in the NBA. Like, you should still kind of look as a perimeter player. Like it's not like he's 31.
Yeah.
He's way too young to look this different.
Did, to his credit, though, he got to LA, and he did slim down a little bit, you know?
He did.
It's good for him, potentially.
Yeah, but, like, it just, I can't believe they did it for Anthony Davis. I just can't, like, hey, we don't like this guy's history, and we're worried about injuries. All right, so what are you going to do? Like, trade him for somebody who's hurt maybe more.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's also older.
Right.
And is not as good.
But I don't like doing, like, the Luka answer we really won't have for, like, 5 or 7 years unless he wins immediately. But this is a tough offseason.
Wait, you don't think, what do you mean we don't know the answer? We know the answer.
I mean, like, will this Luka thing be as successful for the Lakers as you'd expect, considering
sure.
what he's done? Like,
but it's art to me. It's like,
oh yeah, it's
he can win
half.
Nothing, and it's the right move.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, but I think that's not what I meant.
Okay, yeah, you're saying like, was it? Well, I guess it would be.
Yeah, in 5 years, if they don't like make it to the NBA Finals, the Lakers, like, you're gonna have a dummy on TV. You go, oh,
Nico, yeah,
Nico may have been right about this. And, like, no,
and honestly, with Anthony Davis's lottery luck, he's gotten two teams number one pick, so maybe. Maybe he's got something we don't know about.
Yeah.
I think everyone at the time said exactly what this email said. Like, okay, the logic is there. Whether or not you agree with it or not, the logic, I'll follow you down the path.
Yeah, I still disagree with the logic,
right.
But then the execution.
But, like, I'll hear the argument and not call you an idiot.
Yeah.
I'll call you an idiot because of what you did the trade for. But there's, yeah, like, would you do Giannis? Would you have done Giannis then?
Probably because of Giannis' injury history and the age difference.
Yeah, it almost seems like the fairish trade, even though, you know, I don't know what Luka wants to end up there, and I don't know if they want to lose Giannis. But, yeah, like I...
Can you imagine the Lakers without Luka right now? Imagine if they're eliminated, right, but Luka's, like, not part of the future, and then you're trying to figure out the LeBron stuff. You'd be going, like, Anthony Davis say he's just as hurt as he's been the other stops, but he's still on the Lakers.
Yeah.
Like, this Lakers thing would get like smush Parker ugly here.
They'd trade AD though, right? I would assume they would have traded him regardless.
Maybe, but I'm just like, the Luka thing extends hope in a way where that was going to get ugly.
Oh yeah.
Quick.
You have right. a guy versus like that going back into NBA purgatory and being like, okay, we like Reeves.
Yeah.
You know, but like, is he, you know, are we the 8 seed? You know, is that like, you know, versus, oh, we have a dude that can legitimately take us to the finals if he's healthy and I have like some decent pieces around him? Because I still maintain, like, I know that team was built well for him, but that Mavs team was mostly him. right? Like there are very few guys. There are very few guys that can do that, and that's why I will always be like, I know there's problems with Luka. I agree with the Windhorst thing after the finals. Like, I thought that was great from him, but that's why I'll always be like, yeah, but he can do that.
Totally agree. That's not, if you go through all the teams that have made the NBA finals, that's not going to rank even near the middle, I would say, of like the last few decades of teams that are in the NBA finals.
Yeah. All right. Last one. Matias. This is, subject is fan of the pod from Paraguay. Okay. Nice. Hey guys, my name is Matias. I'm a Sixers fan from Paraguay. No gym stats, but my NBA player comparison would be Brent Berry because I also got cheated on. Hate to see that.
Yeah.
Anyway, first of all,
we don't know. Is that true? So I don't even
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm unaware of the Brent Berry situation.
So I don't want
to. No, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, we're trying to get him on. So anyway, first of all, big good fan luck, of the man. Pod. Even when it's Jokic propaganda, just kidding. I actually love the guy, even if I don't agree with some of the media coverage, but that's not on him. My question is for you guys is, do you think Daryl Morey might be washed? Okay. I'm interested.
Wow.
Wait, hold on. There's more.
Okay.
I think he overall did a good job with the Sixers. And if he leaves this offseason, the team will be in a better place than when he came here. Post-bubble sweep against the Celtics. I also think that the big three model is dead on this apron era, especially if your owner is not willing to pay the tax. Even if superstars win games, you still need the pawns to last during the regular season and those first rounds of the playoffs. The Sixers were the only team to go six deep on the first round, and they had nothing left in the tank against the Knicks. To be clear, I wasn't expecting them to win, but losing in four, where there were only two of those games were competitive, is still a tough way to lose. And the most troubling thing for me this season wasn't only the McCain trade, but the fact that, quote, the one that got away on the deadline was apparently Kawhi Leonard. Like, I can't even begin to understand what was the plan if that trade went through. Sorry if this went too long. Love the pod. And I want to sneak in here and say that I'm pro Cerruti. Thank you. Want to know if he has any takes about Arsenal getting that bullshit call this weekend against West Ham. I will give that to you if you want.
Email's getting too long.
after scoring a lot of similar goals from corner kicks this season. Love you guys. Greetings from Paraguay.
Is Daryl Morey washed? What I've said from the beginning of like this last push here is, think about it. I mean, he hits on Maxi in an incredible way. They luck out in a weird way by getting to add somebody like VJ, where if things were working out, you would never be able to pick that high to add a player like that. His clear cap space post Harden thing, where I was on Harden's side with that whole deal, which you're not going to hear me say very often, it works out because they clear the cap space. And we just talked about free agency on the earlier part with the Lakers. It's like there's just not that many great options, and yet they are able to get Paul George because they're going to give him the extra year, when I think the Clippers felt like he wasn't going to leave LA, and the Clippers are going like very early in that deal because it's still, what, 2 years, 110 plus million for Paul George, as he, what, turns 38 at the end of it. So the things that he did, he deserves credit for. And there's never a time that I'm going to look at Daryl and think, oh, well, he's lost it. Like, I think he's always going to be able to evaluate players. I think for the most part, like, there's guys, like, whether it's Barlow, you know, Oubre's been really good with them. I think Adembona looks like he's going to be a rotational guy for a long time. But when you have the worst contract on the NBA books on your team with the Embiid extension, which I don't understand why they did it ahead of time, and sometimes teams are just like, hey, let's get everybody signed. Everybody's happy. We're all sort of on the same page. I mean, their downfall is Embiid more than it is Morey. And I don't know if, like, not extending Embiid, like, they're probably going to have to do it at some point anyway, but maybe it could have been a lesser number considering the injury stuff. I don't think he is... I would never agree with that. He's not washed. And I understand the McCain part of it, but I think the way the McCain thing was decided was, are we going to extend for big money another small guard who's never going to be a starter because of VJ and Maxi? Can we get back what we used and then a couple other seconds? I mean, it just sucks because they needed scoring, and then you're watching McCain hit all these other shots. But I don't think that's an unreasonable, like, process of planning it out with McCain. Of like, sure, and he got hurt.
But McCain, though, like, you hit on him. He's probably better than where you drafted him at. I know he had the injuries. And then you basically start from zero again. That didn't make sense to me. Like, you can get it. And
I get that, but he was never going to start for them with VJ and Maxi.
So, but, like, okay, but him? You still like he's still a valuable player. Like I still can't believe like there just wasn't other teams that would be like, wait, that's all it takes to get Jared McCain. You know, I know, I don't know. Like maybe a lot of guys don't like painting nails and TikTok videos, but I'd take him on the Magic in 2 seconds. Like I don't.
People like McCain, by the way. Like the team liked him in Philly. Like his teammates and that kind of stuff. So you don't ever hear any stuff like that. But I think they were just like, hey, it's going to be okay if we do this. And then it looks so bad right now. You just get swept and he's making shots for the best team in the league. To finish, no, he is not washed. He is good at his job. But the decisions that the PG thing ends up burning him. The Embiid contract destroys you. And that's what happens sometimes, you know? That's what something we all like, man, they're going to get Paul George and they added into Embiid and they already have Maxey in place. Like ideally, if it's these three guys together, you could say Paul George is a bad bet financially. You could say Embiid's a bad bet financially. Like he may be done, but I wouldn't compare it to some of these other guys and say he's done because of his own incompetence. Cause I think he's a really good GM. He would be done because the bets that he placed didn't work out for all the reasons that we've already talked about now for a couple of years.
What is their out? Like if they, all right, say we have these two great guards and in 3 years, like maybe we can get PG and maybe Embiid off the books. Like what does that look like? How do they build around those two guys long term? Or is it just, hey, we have to wait.
What they'll probably do. Well, I don't know. Morey, if he still has the job, is really aggressive and trying to do some different stuff. But I don't know why anyone would trade for Embiid. Unless they were trying to dump other terrible contracts, but no other contract is as bad as his contract. And, you know, look, unfortunately, like when you're bringing Embiid in too, like, I don't know that he's like the best number one face of the franchise guy. Like that story came out finally of like, hey, he's kind of difficult day to day and it sort of sucks. And instead of him like saying, yeah, I need to do a better job, like his whole thing was, I can't believe somebody would say this. And so then it was like, did any of this get fixed? So
yeah,
I always look, I wouldn't say Daryl's my favorite, but I think he's a really good basketball person. So I know to washed.
30 seconds on Arsenal. It was the right call, but it's bullshit because they've been doing this where they grab goalkeepers all season and follow them. And they just so happen to get that call in one of the most important games and moments of the season. For those that don't know, there was a stoppage time equalizer against West Ham. They're in the title race with Manchester City. If they drop points, they're basically letting City back into it. They're up 1-0 at a time. West Ham scores to tie it. And they VAR called the goal off because of interference with the goalkeeper.
VAR.
So people are saying Varsenal. I'm not saying that. People are saying that. But yeah, I thought it was the right call, but the wrong process.
Fitting. Very fitting. That'll do it for us on a good 10 minutes. Please subscribe to the YouTube page. Hit us up on our mailbag at nbamailbagrr@gmail.com. And we will see you again soon.